Drive Time on RT Radio 1, sponsored by Zurich. When it comes to pensions, performance counts. Speak to a financial broker about a Zurich pension.
Let's head to COP29 now, because UN Secretary General Antonio Guterres said today that small, climate-vulnerable island states have the right to be angry with rich nations for their failure to lead on climate action. You're at the sharp end of a colossal injustice, he said to them. It contrasts with the statement by Azerbaijan's president yesterday, praising oil and gas as a gift from God. That's what he said. In a moment, I'll speak with Laura Ballman from Concern Worldwide. But first, let's hear from RT's environment correspondent, George Lee, who's on the line from Baku. George, good evening to you.
Good evening.
Is there really, first of all, let me ask you this, is there really a smell of oil in the air there?
No, I haven't had it anyway. Maybe it's the time of year, but no.
Okay, well,
and not only that, I have to say, my impression of the place is quite a friendly, relaxed place. Mm-hmm. I don't know whether that's for real, but that's my impression. Okay. Getting various taxis and so on, and bumping into people, I didn't feel any tension or any. Didn't smell any oil.
Right, and it runs smoothly. The conference in general, does it?
So far. Now, it's early days. There are rows developing behind the scene. We now know that, for instance, the French ecology minister isn't coming because of stuff that was said in relation to French crimes in colonial territories by the president of Azerbaijan, and they've taken grave exception to them. That Argentina's ministers have been told to withdraw. That they're, you know, they have a very right-wing kind of leader in Argentina who has been claiming that climate crisis is a socialist lie, and maybe he's taken his cue from the election in America of Donald Trump, and he's toughening the line there. And there's quite a bit of needle in relation to that whole issue about the West being responsible for. The climate crisis, Bangladesh's leader took a very strong line on that today, basically when asked by journalists about it, and he said, why don't you fix the problem? You caused it, the West. And that it's humiliating to be asked, having to ask for loans to fix problems that they didn't cause. Mm. So there's plenty of tension behind the scenes.
Yeah, that's very interesting, isn't it? I mean, the absentees from rich, industrialised Western nations doesn't help either. And when you hear the president-elect Donald Trump during his campaign saying stuff like drill, baby, drill, I mean, that doesn't help the situation in terms of climate action or trying to find a negotiation which Eamon Ryan, among others, is tasked with.
That's right. And Eamon Ryan himself said today that the election of Donald Trump has probably made it harder to get the agreement behind the scenes that they're talking about. Remember, his job that he's been given by the COP29 presidency is to be one of these ministerial co-chairs to work on behalf of the COP and the United Nations to see where the blockages are behind the scenes, which might prevent governments and countries signing up to an agreement in terms of that finance, climate finance commitment, a big one by the end of this. And his first take was that it's harder to get this agreement because Donald Trump has been elected. And then you find the Argentinian delegation being told, here, walk away.
Yeah.
So no, this is not going to be easy.
It's not going to be easy because I think, was it the Albania PM who said, what's the point of this COP conference or a climate justice or action conference if the main polluters aren't there?
Yeah, well, I didn't follow that one, but yes, there is a good deal of that. And I guess that's a lot of people have been referring to the fact that, and even on a formal level, that yet there are some. There is a rolling back and a tendency to roll back in terms of climate action by certain governments, not by all, and that is the wrong direction. You know, against that, you have Brazil, which came out today with increased nationally determined contributions. That's this notion whereby we all have to come up with what we can do, and by that I mean governments and countries, and always been cranking up and put under greater pressure. And Brazil will be responsible for the next COP negotiations next year, and they have the big task of reviewing 10 years after the climate, after the Paris Climate Agreement, and specifically increasing, because of the commitment in the Paris Agreement, everybody's commitment to the nationally determined contribution. So they took the lead today and they increased their own, and the pressure is on other countries to do the same. And you saw yesterday where the UK increased its commitment in terms of cutting greenhouse gases. So you've got both sides. You've got the people beginning behind the scenes to three sides. One, continued anger over the damage which has been done to countries who cannot afford to fix the problems that they're suffering over climate change that they didn't cause. And you have other people saying, we're not paying for any of this, like Donald Trump, and we're not going to be tied to anybody's rules, or like the Argentinians and pulling out. And then you have the others saying, no, hold on, we really have to get ahead with this, which is the likes of Brazil and the UK. So it's very complicated.
Is Trump dominating the conversation there, George?
I wouldn't say that Trump is dominating the conversation. No, I haven't heard a lot of people talk about Trump talking, but everybody knows it's in the background. And you can see that's why there are great fears about how far they're going to get, because of that seeping away of the a little bit of the tide towards let's get a deal done. In some quarters. Mm-hmm.
Okay, George Lee, thanks very much indeed for joining us from COP29. Also there is Laura Ballman, who's Climate Resilience Advocacy Advisor with Concern Ireland. Laura, you're very welcome to the programme. I know you're looking at the finance element and negotiation of all of this. It's very complex, the negotiation, as George has outlined, but what would you like to see?
So countries, what we'd like to see out of this COP is that countries from the global north are ambitious. There needs to be a commitment to ensuring substantial financing. People who are dealing with climate change now in the global north, Western countries, they need to step up and be accountable for having profited and benefited from high emission economies. The global south is paying unequally for climate change, experiencing impacts and experiencing loss and damages. And countries in the global south, countries that Concerns works for, are dependent on sufficient levels of funding to adapt.
And the fund, the negotiation they're undertaking right now is to fund mitigation and loss and damage and adaptation to climate change, particularly in the global south or in countries worst affected. Isn't that right? And it's not it's not loans they want anymore. Isn't that right?
No. So what we're asking for and what the Global South is asking for is funding must prioritise grant-based financing. So grants are particularly critical to fund adaptation and meet the economic losses or costs of loss and damage. Because these pathways of climate finance do not have the same potential to attract private financing like mitigation does. Mm-hmm. Developing countries are facing existential debt crisis, as we're well aware. Climate change has forced countries to borrow more to meet the needs of their populations. Sticking to the status quo of loans and piling additional foreign debt on countries who are already struggling to develop and are now dealing with the burden of climate change, it's just not just and it's not fair.
Can you tell, you say the Global North needs a step up here, Laura. Can you tell our listeners what the actual impact of climate change is in the countries most vulnerable to it?
Yeah, so in the countries that we're working in, obviously they're facing loss and damage. They're having to adapt. They're having to change the ways of being that they currently have because they're no longer working. So when communities or countries are impacted, losing lives, losing their livelihoods, their homelands, and in some cases their culture, their language, or even things that are sacred to them. For example, like in Bangladesh in the past 12 months, they've experienced catastrophic flooding, cyclones, droughts, and heat waves, all of which communities are impacted by. Communities need to be able to adapt, whether through climate smart agriculture, rainwater harvesting, diversifying their livelihoods, or building the awareness and the resilience of their communities. All of this costs money, but we do know that it works, and the quality and the scale of the financing for this is massively important. Financing needs to be available for adaptation, meaning the ability for communities to prepare and then respond to climate change impacts.
I have a fear, Laura, that in this part of the world or the global north, that they might feel a distance removed from the most vulnerable countries to climate change. So even though people might empathise with the people that you're describing there in those countries, that call to action mightn't come as urgently as required. Is that a fear that's legitimate, do you think?
I'm not sure that it's legitimate. And like, that's one of the reasons that concern is here at this COP. We have colleagues here from Bangladesh, Kenya, Pakistan, Malawi. All of these countries are at the front line of climate change. They're all pushing for ambitious outcomes. And we're here to hold the global north accountable. That's our role. Countries we work with are facing climate impacts, compounding both poverty and it's driving hunger. Ensuring those at the front line of work are represented here is paramount to our agenda at being at COP. And people should understand that people are here, people are voicing those communities, the experiences of those communities, and that's they are well represented within the negotiations.
I don't know if you heard the Prime Minister of Italy, Giorgia Meloni. She addressed delegates at COP there, and she insisted gas and biofuels and hydrogen and carbon capture and storage will continue to have a role in supplying energy for a growing world population, she said. But she also cited nuclear fusion power as a potential game changer, in her words, a game changer. Would you agree with her there?
Well, I think that's from someone who's from New Zealand, who we're completely anti-nuclear. No, I think these are diversions away from what the conversation should be about actual accountability within this process. I think these conversations, they're sideline conversations. They're ways for the West to excuse what they've done, and ways for them to sideline serious conversations around compensation, around financing, around adaptation, and around loss of damage.
What would you say to people who would make the argument, what is the point of, and not in any defeatist way or negative way, but to call others out, what is the point of trying to advance climate change policies, climate action policies, when the likes of the US are opting out of Paris, or India or China or other massive nations, industrialized nations, aren't doing as much as they could? What's the response there?
So there's a vast range of representatives. There's over 75,000 people here from different countries across the globe. And ideally, and for the large majority, we're all here with the same collective goal, and that's to redress the impacts of climate change. And like whether the US wants to engage in the process or not, or people want to hold up the process, different parties want to hold up the process, it's not going to be a deciding factor on the progress moving forward and the expectations of the next 2 weeks. People are strong, and there's a general sense that people are, there's a good vibe in the air.
But if the US isn't pulling its weight, then we're all, I mean, the targets go out the window, don't they? Global targets?
In terms of the NDCs, that is down to individual targets. And that will, as the person before me said, like that obviously impacts how we're reaching 1.5 or not, or whether we're going to move beyond that or not. But there's a large majority, and you'll hear negotiators stand up in every single negotiating room, negotiation after negotiation, and they're committed to that 1.5, whether you're talking about developed or developing nations. The large majority are committed to that.
Well, let's hope there's success in Baku at COP29 for the sake of us all. Laura Ballman, Climate Resilience Advocacy Advisor with Concern Ireland. Thank you very much indeed. And beforehand, George Lee, RTÉ's Environment Correspondent.